Jambo.
Lessons from the screen, what we mean is we go through different documentaries to tell you what they gon' do. Give you our lessons, give them our blessings. If they trash, we tell you there is no second guessing. Knowledge is power, but time is precious. And we're here to keep you from them lessons. So sit back as we groove, giving you the review, so you only spend time on the docs that you need to.
Hey, hey, hey. And we back. Welcome to Lessons from the Screen. Welcome to Lessons from the Screen, the show where we give you a review of whether or not your show, your documentary, your document, you know the deal, you know what it is. Is it worth watching? We waste our time, our energy, and our brain power so that you don't have to. And as always, you are welcome. Lessons from the Screen is brought to you by PacSync through the Freedom Train Network. You can find us on www.freedomtrainradio.com or on iTunes and Google Play Music. And as of this recording should be, and these shows are recorded weeks in advance, but as of this recording should be, you can find us on Stitcher as well. So be sure to head to all three places, Google Play Music, iTunes, and Stitcher, to give us a review, like, share, subscribe, send it to your friends and all that other stuff. Make sure they all do the same. And then come back to www.freedomtrainradio.com and interact with us. Show us some love. Leave some comments. Let's get in some dialogue on the website. Also, be sure to head to www.paxinc.org to show some love and check out what our sponsors are doing, because they're always doing big things. PAX Inc. is a Black activist and advocacy organization focused on developing the Black community through a shift in culture, education, and economics. And as always, Lessons from the Screen has a frame of reference and perspective that is aligned with that of the Black community. So everything we look at will be looked at with a racial component involved, and with some lessons that can be used to improve our community, should we so desire to do so. Just my opinion, of course. This week, we will be talking about a document for the first time on the show. Recently unclassified FBI document to police departments detailed a new threat to police officers that was labeled as Black identity extremists. During this show, which will be longer than usual because we're actually going to get into it. So this isn't really going to be a review. By the time we finish with this show, you're going to know what's in this document completely. It's only 12 pages, though. Relax. But during this show, we will be detailing what the document says, what it possibly means, and what we can learn from it. This week on Lessons from the Screen, we are looking at Black identity extremists. So, being that this is our first time doing a document, I'm going to give you guys the procedure. So, the very first thing we do is we go through the document section by section, telling you some of the key points, some of the major issues, points of discussion in the document. Then we go back through it, giving you some of our beliefs about what can be interpreted and pulled from the document. The reason we do it this way, even though it maybe we'll take a little bit more time, is so that you get a pure understanding of the document. If we told you what we thought as we went through the document, it would influence your understanding of the document, not only in the sections that we're giving you our opinion on, but also in how you interpret later sections. So if you wanted to just listen to some of the key points of the document and not go any further, not hear what we have to say about the document, then you could stop at that particular point in the show and never hear anything that we pulled out of the document, things that we believe are coming, or lessons that we believe can be pulled. So we're going to jump right into it, and it starts with an executive summary. The executive summary says very likely, and every time you hear the term very likely, they are speaking of having an 80 to 95% certainty of the information being presented. So, very likely, BIE perceptions of police brutality against blacks spurred an increase in premeditated retaliatory violence against police. BIE stands for Black Identity Extremist. Very likely that violence against blacks will serve as justification for further police violence. Very likely, this increase began following the Michael Brown situation in Ferguson and the grand jury declination to indict. FBI believes it is very likely that subsequent incidents of alleged violence against black people continue to feed the resurgence of violent criminal activity in BIE movements. The FBI believes it is very likely that some BIEs are influenced by a mix of anti-authoritarian, more sovereign citizen ideology and BIE ideology. The FBI has a high confidence, and that high confidence rating means that the FBI's judgment is based on high quality information from multiple sources. So, they have a high confidence based on a history of violent incidents attributed to individuals who acted on behalf of their ideological beliefs. The FBI makes this judgment with the key assumption that recent incidents are ideologically motivated. So then we move on to the scope. Now, this document is focused on individuals with BIE ideological motivations who have committed targeted premeditated attacks against law enforcement officers since 2014. This does not address BIEs who have attacked law enforcement officers during the course of routine duties, such as responding to calls or traffic stops in which violent actions were reactionary in nature. This report answers two questions. To what extent are BIEs targeting interest retaliatory, and what cross-programmatic relationships influence the BIE movement? This is the first FBI analytic intelligence product to assess influences between the sovereign citizen extremist movement and the black identity extremist movement. The FBI has two previously reported BIE retaliatory reports, and they both agreed with this report. A report on the 23rd of March 2016 FBI Intelligence Bulletin titled Black Separatist Extremists Call for Retaliation in Response to Police Involved Incidents Could Incite Acts of Violence Against Law Enforcement. This report assessed incidents involving allegations of law enforcement abuse and related legal proceedings and the likelihood that these will lead to BSE. BSE stands for Black Separatist Extremists, calls for violent retaliation and incite domestic extremists to violence against law enforcement. And then there was a report on the 14th of November, 2014, which was another intelligence bulletin titled Potential Criminal Reactions to Missouri Grand Jury Announcement. And this report assessed the announcement of the grand jury's decision in the death of Michael Brown in Ferguson, and that it would likely be exploited by some individuals to justify threats and attacks against law enforcement and critical infrastructure. The source of this information was police investigations, FBI investigations, media interviews, social media posts, and online news articles that were deemed credible and reliable. The FBI investigations review was between September 2014 and December 2016, and the statements made to law enforcement during these investigations helped with identifying the ideology, and the FBI continues to look for more information to help identify this ideology. Next, we move into the examples. Now, they had six examples in this report that they used to basically make their case. The first example, and they looked at six targeted attacks since 2014, and the FBI believes it is very likely that all six attacks were BIE retaliatory strikes. Even though five of the attacks occurred following controversial police shootings of black people by white cops, the FBI does not believe that the race of the cops being targeted was a factor. The first example was Makai Johnson on July 7, 2016. He ambushed and shot 11 police, killing five in Dallas, Texas. He told negotiators that he was upset about police violence and white people. He had been kicked out of BIE groups on social media for being too extreme. A group identified as the Black Power Political Organization claimed responsibility. Now, this was not, that wasn't in the report, but it was in the global terrorism database that the report pulled information from. So I just threw that in there. Zell H. Thompson attacked four white NYPD cops in Queens with a hatchet on the 23rd October 2014. No one was killed but him. His writings indicated that he was an advocate for armed struggle against the oppressors and a mass revolt against the U.S. social, economic, and political systems, which he perceived to be white dominated. He also made statements about the USA being a beast that needed its head, hands, and feet chopped off. On October 4th and October 13th of 2016, an individual allegedly shot at two different police stations in Indianapolis, Indiana. The suspect left a handwritten note at the scene of one of the shootings identifying as a Moore and made anti-white statements. The suspect posted pictures on social media of black men carrying assault rifles behind text calling for social injustice and retribution. The suspect was later involved in a shootout with police during his arrest. Now, the report doesn't mention his name, but they are referring to, and I believe it's pronounced Des Moines, Wilcoxon. Now, at the time of this report, his identity and his connections to the shootings was unknown. But he was also convicted of murdering an 82-year-old white male, and that's eventually how they caught him. On 17th of July, 2016, Gavin Eugene Long ambushed and shot six law enforcement officers in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, before being killed. He killed three cops, one black and two white. He had expressed black separatist rhetoric on social media and in his manifesto, including rants against crackers and a reference to black men killed to a black male killed by police earlier that month in the city. His laptop contained the residential addresses of two officers involved in the Alton Sterling shooting. His writings indicated that he saw his actions as a necessary evil to create change. He declared himself to be a Moor. Then on 13 September 2016, an individual reportedly drove his vehicle towards three white police officers in Phoenix, Arizona. He hit two of them before he was arrested. His social media account indicated that he was tied to a BIE group and a Morris group. No name was given, but I believe they are talking about Mark Payne. And then on the 21st of November 2014, a BIE was arrested and eventually convicted for purchasing explosives he planned to use in Ferguson after the release of the grand jury verdict. They had no name given. He filed paperwork declaring himself an Aboriginal Indigenous Free Sovereign Moor and possessed a Moorish identification card. Now, again, no name was given in this, but this incident involved two people, Olajuwon Ali and Brandon Baldwin, both of which who are affiliated with the New Black Panther Party, with Ali being the head of the St. Louis chapter. He was also involved in the sovereign citizenship movement. Now, we move on to perspectives, the perspective section. This report states that BIEs have historically justified and perpetuated violence against law enforcement they perceived as representative of institutionalized oppression, but had not targeted law enforcement with violence for the last 20 years. It states that violence peaked in the 60s and 70s in response to the changing socioeconomic attitudes and treatment of blacks. It also states that the Black Liberation Army of the 70s was involved in a number of murders, robberies, kidnappings, hijackings, racketeering, and smuggling. It states that the convergence of the BIE and the Moorish sovereign citizen ideology very likely leads to violence against law enforcement, and that it is very likely that a few of the BIEs who have targeted law enforcement since 2014 were influenced by more than one ideological perspective. It goes on to state that the BIE violence has been rare over the past 20 years, and there is sparse evidence of any conversion with SCE who adhere to Moorish beliefs, who have, and SCE is sovereign citizen extremist, who adhere to Moorish beliefs, who have historically engaged in nonviolent fraudulent schemes. It also differentiates between premeditated violence and situational violence, such as violence during traffic stops. It goes on to suggest that not all Moors are sovereign citizens, and not all sovereign citizens are Moors, and not all sovereign citizens that are Moors are violent or engage in criminal activity. It states again that previous reports on BIE violence were on potential for violence, where this one is actually on violence. And goes on to say that this may be indicative of a resurgence of targeted violence within the BIE movement. Only two more sections to go, so we're going to move on to alternatives. The FBI did consider that retaliatory violence was not ideologically motivated, but rather a result of some individuals harboring animosity and using racial tensions as a cover. But that alternative is very unlikely, and that means that it's a 5 to 20% chance. This alternative was considered low chance because the six cases looked at in this report show premeditated targeting, which isn't typical of strictly criminal subjects, which usually commit spontaneous defensive violent acts and use idiosyncratic reasons unrelated to ideology for justification. What they're saying is people that usually are using some sort of situation to take advantage of their own personal beefs usually don't plan things out. They usually don't target and show premeditated thought towards doing something. So, and they also don't use ideology as a reason. They use their own individual thought processes and problems as a reason. So we're going to move on. The FBI judges it very likely that BIEs proactively target police and openly identify and justify their actions with social political agendas equal to their perceived injustices against African Americans. One more section to go. Outlooks. The FBI assesses it is very likely that BIE's perception of unjust treatment will continue to cause premeditated attacks and grow membership in BIE groups. They also think it will increase the number of lone agents inspired by BIE rhetoric. Possible indicators for BIEs posing a violent threat to law enforcement include advocating for violence against law enforcement, violent anti-white rhetoric, attempts to acquire illegal weapons or explosives, and affiliations with others in the Black separatist, extremist, and sovereign citizen extremist movements. If you don't want to hear the commentary, then this is where you get off the train, because we're about to go. Okay, so we gotta define a few terms before we really get cooking. We already talked about the likelihoods and the probabilities. And to that, we want to highlight that it says in this report that the FBI does not use statistical analysis to come up with these numbers. Now, to me, that sounds like an ass pull, but it might not be an ass pull. It might be a crotch grab. I don't know. Who knows? They don't say how they come up with these numbers. They just say that they have percentages up here and they didn't use statistical analysis to come up with them. So then we move on to the more important terms here. Extremism is a term that obviously is in the title of this report, and it is a term that leading up to this report coming out has garnered a lot of attention. And it's being used a lot, but nobody's really defining it. And that is probably because there is no clear legal definition for the term. It is mostly a political term. But from everything that I could pull from looking at numerous other reports, from going to numerous Leo websites, and every time I say Leo, I mean law enforcement officers. So every time I go to numerous Leo websites, numerous databases, doing as much as best as I could find, as best as I can to find a definition for this term, the closest thing I could come up with is basically boiling it down. Extremism is terrorism, except instead of the actor being a foreign person, it is homegrown. So an extremist is a homegrown terrorist. It is a terrorist that is a United States citizen. And again, there are no solid law enforcement definitions. And of course, we can take Webster definitions and we can make other inferences based on how we would normally use the term extremist. But it's important to put this out here that the term is used very loosely and very broadly in terms of a lot of political statements and in terms of a lot of law enforcement documents. So I think that that is very significant that they choose to use this report under the banner of extremism, because the other thing that extremism does is it allows you to talk about terrorism without using the term terrorism. And that is significant because when you start applying the term terrorist and terrorism to something, it is exceeding the bar for getting a case prosecuted is high. It is not an easy thing to prosecute someone on terrorism charges. It is significantly easier to prosecute someone for being an extremist. So, because there is no bar for extremism. So, politically it's used to set a tone, and legally it's used to make prosecutions and prosecuting cases easier. And that is really where this term becomes very, very nefarious and something that we definitely need to pay attention to. We get into, so black identity extremists, I believe personally they're talking about pro-black, anybody in the pro-black movement, and I'm sure they would say they're mostly focusing on people that could be considered militant, but even militancy is an interesting word that isn't really defined in terms of what makes someone militant and what makes someone not militant, what makes someone just strong in their stances. So even to that, you get into this big area of gray, but I personally believe they're talking about anybody in the pro-black movement that expresses any sort of cultural pride that they deem is a little bit too much, a little bit too over the top. You just went a little bit too far with that one. Then we get into black separatist extremists, which is another term mentioned in the report, another label. And this basically identifies people that want to separate either from America or from white people. So this isn't just black people that want to separate themselves and find their own country. This is also black people that want to create their own space within black America. And that is whether you're militant or not. So there are a lot of people that fall onto that category. And then we run into the sovereign citizen extremists. Now, this is interesting because the sovereign citizenship movement was actually a white movement. So when they say sovereign citizen extremist, I honestly believe that at that point they're talking about the white group. Because there is another point in the document where they mention Moorish sovereign citizen extremist. And that is the black group. But the sovereign citizen movement was started around the 60s. White people were upset with the gains that other people were getting in America, the civil rights gains and all those other things. And they basically were like, you know what? Screw this. We don't have to listen to the government. Our own sovereignty as individuals supersedes the government's authority and their ability to tell us what to do and impede on our rights. And so we just don't want to listen, and we're not going to listen. Typically, these people don't carry driver's license. They don't want any sort of government ID, and they don't really respect any government institutions or officials. And this has led to them all the way through the 80s and 90s into this current day being very violent and very confrontational with police officers. Now, what is interesting is that the sovereign citizenship movement, with the white people, when that they started, says that black people cannot be sovereign citizens because of the 14th Amendment. They believe that the 14th Amendment permanently enslaves black people to the U.S. government. Interesting. Some kind of way, black people have taken up this movement and made it our own. And that is interesting as well, because when you start talking about the Moorish version, the Moorish Science Temple developed by Nobel Drew Ali, who was actually mentioned in the report in the footer notes, they released a statement in the 90s, I believe it was, distancing themselves from this movement, basically saying, we don't have nothing to do with this. We don't want to have nothing to do with this, so on and so forth. The letter is on the internet. You can find it. Despite all of that, these two groups that seem diametrically opposed, inherently against each other, managed to come together some kind of way. And now you have black people claiming to be both Moors and sovereign. And usually those black people base their sovereignty off of some sort of belief that there was a treaty, the Treaty of Friendship, the American-Moroccan Treaty of Friendship, somehow applies to them, even though they cannot prove any sort of Moroccan lineage. And then you get into other areas of that where, you know, you have some Moors who honestly believe that they're Aboriginal peoples, and being such, they're not from Morocco, they're from here, but they still identify as Moors because in some languages, Moors means black. And so you get into a whole bunch of areas here with that term, but I don't understand how that movement was allowed within the pro-black sphere. Then we get into the ambiguity and the just the vagueness of this report. And I think that all Leo reports that I've read have been vague, and I think they're vague for a reason. I think the vagueness serves the purpose of giving people a broad range to entrap a large amount of people. So this report doesn't define definitive this report doesn't have definitive terms on what anything is. Anything. You know, and it doesn't provide, but it also provides the flexibility to grab people who may or may not look like what you're looking for just because of the broadness of the report, the confusion that it creates. Now, on the other end, you can say, okay, that's a law enforcement tool because it doesn't give people a profile to tailor themselves away from. But on the other hand, as a black person looking at this report that is largely targeting me, I see a report that says, okay, so we're going to target these people, but we're not going to define who these people are because we don't want to let these people know that we're targeting these people. So we're going to target these people that behave like this and act like this, but people that behave like this and act like this might not actually be this. But yet and still, we still need to talk to all of the people that behave like this and act like this. So to cover our bases, we're going to just attack all the people that behave like this and act like this, even if they are or are not a part of this, which we are trying to confront. And in all of that confusion, you basically just say any black person that seems to be proud of being black is on the list and needs to be questioned. That level of ambiguity and vagueness is a recipe for disaster in a document that largely reads like marching orders for law enforcement officers to start attacking pro-black people. Now, in that, I want to say with regards to framing, and I want to move on from the ambiguity and vagueness into the framing area. When we begin to talk about the framing of this document, I think it is important to be careful not to frame this in such a way that compares our community to other communities by saying, where is the white person version of this document? And I know that is the very first place most people's minds goes. I know in the weeks leading up to the weeks after this report came out, that is where nearly all of the questioning was there. Where is the white person one? And why don't they have one? And that's the dangerous framing for two reasons. The first reason is it makes the assumption that if there was a white person one, we would be okay with this. And it almost like it gives them an out. The second reason that's dangerous is because there actually is a white person one. It just is not identified as white identity extremist. But there are profiles for white people with extreme views against the government. There's one mentioned in this report, the sovereign citizenship movement. We know that there are reports against the Ku Klux Klan. The other reason why this is dangerous is because weeks before this report came out in September, I believe it was stated by the newly appointed FBI director at the time that they had about 1,000 domestic terrorist investigations into white supremacist groups amongst other groups. If you frame this in that way and somebody finds that report, it destroys your entire framing. It destroys your entire argument. It makes it hard for you to come back when you say that they don't do this types of things for white people. And then somebody finds out, yes, they do. Here's the evidence. They do it all the time. So that is a bad framing. It is a really bad framing. Now, if we want to get into how they execute those reports versus these reports, that's an entirely different conversation. And I still think that that is a poor framing. But we got to be really careful about how we frame this. I honestly think framing it, this report by itself targeting us is bad enough. We don't need extra emphasis on other groups to make this any worse. We have to get out of the habit of comparing ourselves to other people and compare ourselves to ourselves. Are we being treated the way we want to be treated? If the answer is no, then we make moves. If the answer is yes, we're okay. It doesn't matter how other people are being treated. I think we got to get there now. In extreme cases where some people are being treated this way and other people are being treated this way, like certain people are allowed to say jaywalk and other people, if they jaywalk, they get their faces beat in. Okay, that's different. But in the case of this report and in the case of a lot of the racist things that are going on, we have to be fair about what's going on and simply say this is unacceptable. Even if you were doing it to other people, it would still be unacceptable. So we have to be careful about how we frame this discussion. If we really want to make a comparative framing, then we can compare it to what they have done historically to us. And there are several moments in American history now where white people get uncomfortable with that comparison. So if your goal is to elicit some sort of emotional response from white people, then you can go that route. Me personally, that is not my goal. My goal is to help my community. So moving forward, I think we got to be very careful about how we frame this discussion. Then we move on to also in the executive summary, they mentioned the basis for the report and a little bit of history involved. And they talked about ambushing cops. The report mentions a rise in police targeting, but, and I'm going to mention this a lot, they only look at 6 cases over a 2-year period. Now, before you start saying, well, that's all they looked at, but that doesn't mean they're all there are, according to the Global Terrorism Database, I looked it up, there were 16 cases of cops being targeted in this period in the manner in which they are looking at them. 16 cases of cops being targeted. These were the only 6 cases that meet the criteria of cops being ambushed by somebody with a quote-unquote BIE ideology. So it's not that they had other cases they just wanted to minimize. These are the only cases they had, and it is 6 cases. So then you have to worry about the legitimacy of a threat where over a 2-year period, you only have 6 instances of a situation going on. You have to be very critical of that. And then that makes you wonder even more why this why this report was put out. Then they go into the history and they mention that this report was necessary as well because historically, people have acted against police officers and law enforcement officers based on ideological beliefs that were moved into the extreme category. So basically they're saying usually when you have extremist views that are confrontational against the government and against Leos, then that puts Leos at risk. The problem I have with this is that they're saying based on all people instead of looking at the black community specifically. If you look at the black community specifically, we do not have a history of targeting police officers. They have one group that they can name, the Black Liberation Army, that did violent that did participate in violent criminal activities. No one can deny that. But what are these other groups? When we start talking about the white community, when we start talking about other communities, we can list off group after group after group in the black community. Our culture is not of such that we are violent and looking to attack police. Even though the large portion of the civil rights movement was not nonviolent, those people were defensively violent. If you attack me, I'm going to defend myself. They were not looking to attack the police officers arbitrarily. They definitely were not planning to attack the police officers. And that's another component of this that I think is really troubling, because in this report, if it was really centered around preventing the situation from a real perspective of prevention, then they would have some sort of real acknowledgement of responsibility, some sort of real something that would change the practices of police that caused this behavior. But instead, they present this threat in this report that reads a lot like marching orders for what to I look for and what to identify it as. And then they move forward. So we're going to move forward. Now, again, when we get into the scope of this document, I'm just going to say it, 6 attacks over a 2-year period. I can assure you that if police only attack black people 6 times over a 2-year period, we would not be releasing any reports. There would not be any police brutality campaigns. There would not be an uproar. People in this quote unquote BIE movement would not have very much to complain about, because a lot of the other racist things that we experience and a lot of the other racism is hidden so well that the average person can't really see it unless they know what to look for, and they don't want to see it because they've been educated not to desire to look for it. So if you take police brutality out of the equation, a lot of these pro-black movements vanish in the thin air. Now, I mention that because this report is generated because of 6 attacks in a 2-year period. I'm just going to leave that there. You can draw whatever conclusions you want to draw from that, but I'm not going to extrapolate or go any deeper into that, because in my opinion, that speaks for itself about the sheer ridiculousness of the need for a report of this nature that issues marching orders to police officers all over America. Now, this report also mentions that it's the first report to look at black thought and the sovereign movement. The sovereign citizenship movement needs to be excommunicated from black thought, period. I do not understand how this movement became so attractive. Well, I do understand how it became so attractive, but what I don't understand is how it became so viable, how it began to be perceived as so real and so right. The American government has not respected the sovereignty of the Native Americans. The American government has not respected anybody's sovereignty unless they've had the ability to defend their sovereignty. I don't understand. And I did the last show I recorded, I'm not sure when I'm going to put these up, but the last show I recorded was on the Catalonia sovereignty issue, where we broke down sovereignty. I don't understand how the sovereign citizenship movement became such a burgeoning philosophical idea within the realm of the pro-black community. When you really look at the sovereignty issue of it, the legitimacy of the philosophy is non-existent. non-existent. You can't just claim, you know, I'm not, that's outside the realm. I might, no, we're not even going to get into that. But that movement is a fraudulent movement. It's largely tricking people out of large sums of money to get papers that don't matter. Now, the FBI has had two previous reports on black groups, and that is something that we should pay attention to, because a lot of people believe that COINTELPRO is gone. And this proves that COINTELPRO has not gone anywhere but underground. And it also proves that social media is being monitored, because in every one of the examples and even in other places in the report, they mention how much information they gain from social media. Now we move on to the example section. My thoughts on this, again, six examples over a 2-year period. It makes no sense. Makes no sense. The other point I want to mention is that in these examples, these people are ideologically all over the board. You have indigenous peoples, you have Moors, you have New Black Panther Party, you have black separatists. These people are literally all over the board. The only similarity is the disgust for black treatment by Leos, the way we're treated by Leos. Now, this is important because this means that anyone that shows black pride or discontent for black treatment in America could be labeled as a BIE. And I say anyone that's black, because being pro-black is not a prerequisite when you look at these examples. Having a black identity isn't even a prerequisite when you look at these examples, because Aboriginal peoples, they don't identify in the same cultural sense as black people. They identify as people that have been here. They identify as Native Americans, not as African Americans. I'm not going to get into the legitimacy of their claims, but that's what they claim. When you get into the Moors, they do not identify themselves as African Americans, and they honestly believe that us labeling ourselves as black is part of our legal problem, because they say black is a color, not a people. So they don't consider themselves black. So we get into, and we could go all, we could have a show breaking down the six, all of the different identities and ideologies presented in these six cases to illustrate how different they are, and how they aren't, some of them aren't even necessarily pro-black or black identities. This means that any black person that expresses discontent with police brutality or with being in America, period, is a BIE. Just think about what that means. We get into perspectives. I think it's interesting that they talk about historic BIE. They talk about historic BIE behavior. And even though this is the first report with the BIE title on it, this does signify that this is not a new thing. It just means that they finally put a report on it. And I've heard a lot of narratives saying, why would they need something like this now, blah, blah, blah. Why are they coming out of the woodworks with this now? And the important thing to remember is that when you read the report, it does allude to the fact that this is not new, that they have been tracking since the time of the 40s, 50s, and 60s. They never stopped tracking. And they mentioned the BLA, the Black Liberation, a lot. And we, again, being honest, the BLA was responsible for a lot of criminal activities. But again, I say, there is no mention in this document for why people feel they needed to go to the lengths, to such lengths. And I think that's irresponsible in a report that is marching orders for police officers. Now, the report does say that super militants that come in contact with the sovereign citizenship movement can be pushed over the edge. I agree with that. But the report also kind of contradicts itself in some ways, because it says that BIE violence over the past 20 years has been rare, which, again, if you admit that, then why the need for the report? And then it goes on to where it contradicts itself is it says that there is little evidence that the sovereign citizenship movement and the Moorish sovereign citizenship movement are converging. But then elsewhere in the report, it mentions the potential threat of them merging. Now, if it's a threat, but it's not happening, then it's not a threat. That's like me saying I need to release a report on what to do if I need to release a report because there is a nuclear bomb getting ready to go off in my basement. But there is no nuclear bomb in my basement. You know, it just, it doesn't make sense. It really doesn't make sense. What is interesting is that they do distinguish between the two groups in this one section. And the two groups, honestly, from what I've been able to put together, don't know a lot about each other. The white people that I've met that are sovereign citizens, they didn't even know that there was a black branch. And they laugh when you tell them, because they still don't believe that black people can be sovereign. And the black people that I've talked to that were of the black variety did not know that this thought process, this ideology that they ascribe to came from white people that don't like them. So it's very interesting that they make this distinction between these two people. And, you know, maybe now that these people are aware of each other, they'll shake hands and get together. Who knows? I don't know. Now, the alternative section is a straight joke. It's straight trash. Because it doesn't present any alternatives that are viable from their perspective. It's almost like they threw this in here so that they could say, well, at least they can't say that we didn't consider something else. What this alternative reads like to me is that they have a desire to broad stroke this entire report onto a large group of people, black people, and they don't want to back up any of their claims or put any serious thought into considering that it might be different. Because I don't understand how you can legitimately say that six people attacking over 6 years with six multiple different ideological beliefs, all of them being black, all of them having a history, black people, period, having a history going back to the founding of this nation of being mistreated by Leos, even considering the establishment, one of the reasons why law enforcement officers were established in the first place. I don't understand why it is so outside of the realm of possibility that people have been feeling a lot of pent up tension, aggression, and oppression for so long that now with the media coverage and everything else, they're finally deciding, you know what, I'm going to take matters into my own hands. But that's just me again. Now, when we move on to Outlook, the Outlook is interesting because the Outlook of this report reads like a self-fulfilling prophecy, in my opinion. It predicts that violence against Leos will continue to increase while being embedded in a report that is likely going to have Leos further harassing innocent black people while searching for the unicorn that is a BIE. And of course, the increase in harassment of black people is going to spur more BIE, quote unquote, BIE behavior in the black community that is going to spur more violence towards Leos. So that's like me saying, I think we need to punch people in the face more because when we punch them in the face, they get mad and they attack us. And when they attack us, they pose a threat. But like, you punching them in the face is what's making the threat. So in this report, and I know that's a bad analogy, but whatever. But in this report, they're basically saying that violence against police officers will continue to increase. But the report reads like marching orders on how to handle black people, meaning that we need to harass more black people. Whilst come on, people, really? And look, I said before, I don't think that this report needs to be compared to other reports, but I do think that we need to do our own report on the effects of what effect this report will have on Leo harassments towards black people. This Outlook was completely ridiculous, in my opinion. Completely ridiculous. And then, so we get into the top lessons, and then we're going to wrap this up. The top three lessons, in my opinion, and there are a multitude of lessons that can be gained from this report, and the report will be on the Freedom Train, on the Lessons from the Screen area in the Freedom Train website. But the top three lessons for me is that, one, black people, I know we like to say we're not monolithic, and I agree, we're not all one people. But here's something that we need to understand. We are all going to be lumped in together regardless of our status, stations, or ideologies. And this has been proven various different times, a multitude of times throughout history. And even in this very report, the six incidents that they mentioned, the six attacks, those people have different ideologies, but they're all being lumped under one banner. Look at geographically, when we talk about European nations, we talk about Britain, Spain, France, Italy, blah, blah, blah. When we talk about Asian nations, we talk about China, Japan, blah, blah, blah. When we talk about Africa, we talk about Africa. Completely ignoring the fact that there are 50 plus nations in Africa. Black people are going to be lumped together. And a part of that is just because we're minorities. Another part of that is because our differences aren't respected, aren't understood, don't care. And this is something, you know, I did a video about this back when I was doing the Few Minutes with Pat series, and those videos are still up on YouTube. I did a video totally dedicated to this subject of how we're going to be lumped in together. And you can't even just say, well, I'm not them and they aren't going to get me because I'm not militant, I'm not pro-black, I'm not this, I'm not that. Almost every black family I've been exposed to has some militant member in their family. And this report says affiliation and association is enough to identify you as a BIE. But beyond that, you don't have to be. I know a lot of black people that are not pro-black that are very disgusted with police officer treatment of black people. Think about the vagueness, the ambiguity, and the broadness of this report. Those people are still going to be lumped in. So black people need to understand that we're going to be lumped together and we need to behave accordingly. This report also shows that the government, the FBI, they're not trying to solve any problems. Not from a preventative standpoint that involves them changing. We still see continual denial and refusal to acknowledge their hand in creating any of the problems that they're now facing. And I think until the government begins to accept some level of responsibility, we have to begin to think about the approach that suggests that we can change the government, especially with the ways that we're doing it. Now, I'm not saying we just tie our hands and not do nothing. There is a lot of work to be done within the black community that we can do ourselves without help from external entities. Why don't we begin focusing on ourselves instead of focusing on other people's opinions of us? And how other people are treating us. I think that is something that deserves a lot more consideration. Black progress versus white progress. I'm a black progressive. And we need to be a lot more selective about the ideologies and the rhetoric we allow into our culture and into our thought. The sovereign citizenship movement does not have our best interests at heart. It does not have any legitimacy in terms of its ability to create change. It draws needless attention to what we're trying to do, and it pulls vital energy and focus away from real viable solutions that could create lasting impacts within our communities. I'm all for a plethora of different philosophies and thoughts. I love it. I actually enjoy talking to people from the sovereign citizenship movement. I enjoy talking to people that disagree with me, that have different thought processes. But when we have a legitimate problem to solve, certain thought processes, certain philosophies, certain ideologies need to be judged based on their legitimacy, their merit, and their viability towards creating change in that particular situation. And if they don't live up to the standards, they don't need to be involved in the decision making. Some kind of way, the sovereign citizenship movement has found its way into the pro-black, black liberation thought process. And it should not be there. So I want to thank you guys. I'm going to end it right there. I want to thank you guys for listening. I know this show has been longer than normal, but it was a lot to get into. I'm really appreciative. Definitely check us out. Like the show, Stitcher, Google Play, iTunes, freedomtrain.com. Check out our sponsors, PaxInc.com. Check out the other shows that we got going on, Office Hours, The Fix, and obviously the Freedom Train podcast series, the one that started it all. We have writings and things of that nature that are going to be coming to the website in the future. We hope we're trying to make that happen. So if you're interested, definitely drop us a line if you want to be a part of the Freedom Train Network. We love you all, and we will see you next week on the next episode of Lessons from the Screen.
Lessons from the Screen, what we mean is we go through different documentaries to tell you what they gon' do. Give you our lessons, give them our blessings. If they trash, we tell you there is no second guessing. Knowledge is power, but time is precious, and we're here to keep you from them lessons. So sit back as we groove, giving you the review, so you only spend time on the docs that you need to.